Honor it is to be able to speak here and to have everyone come tonight. And by coming tonight, it's not just an encouragement to those who plan the worship and participate and see that things are going, but it's a statement to God that you care, that you have something that's important to you, to set aside what everyone has is a busy day, a busy week, lots of things to do, but we've chosen to be here, and thank you for doing that. Well, let me just start out by opening this box here. We'll have to wait. You have to pay attention. What's your job description? That's the title of the lesson tonight. And it's a subject that, boy, it comes up a lot now. I think even more than it may have in times gone by. The world is different than it was 100 years ago, and it's different even than it was when I kind of got out of school and started looking for a job. It was a different world back then. We hear a lot about current statistics in the news. You hear things at work in your field that you work in, that while our population is increasing, and you know there's going to be more people, and obviously there'll be more people working and more jobs, but there's a lot of jobs at the same time that we have an increasing population and increasing economy that are disappearing. I've seen that happen. Just where I work and the places I've worked, and I'm certain all of you have in just things that you do. And, you know, when I see that, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, well, obviously, you know, times are different and I would expect, you know, certain jobs to disappear. But Forbes came out with a list of, you know, some of the top jobs that are disappearing. And it really surprised me because a lot of these jobs are in industries that are booming and growing. You know, I would think the top jobs that are disappearing would be like typewriter repairman or, you know, VHS video store rentals or things like that. But it's jobs in booming industries. One of the number one jobs, which, you know, I've never even heard of this job, but there has to be a lot of them because we all use gas and oil and things, but a petroleum pump system operators and refinery operators. Those jobs are going down, yet we're using more and more energy than ever. It's not that we're not using energy. It's just things change and they can do more with less people. They don't need as many people to run whatever kind of pump that is, whatever kind of refinery that is. And I've seen the exact same thing happen at my work. And people I talk to, I used to work at Texas Instruments. They've went from 70,000 to 20,000 or something. They just shrink and shrink and shrink because they can do more with less people. And that's the goal, is to try to use less people and save money. There's so many cost pressures, and new technology can replace people. Economics realities make some jobs just not, you know, you just can't afford to have someone do that anymore. You just either have to not do that or do it yourself, or, you know, find some way to just get rid of that. Globalization, because you can ship stuff overseas very efficiently, it makes it cost effective to do stuff overseas. And you know, there's a lot of jobs that are just plain disappearing, and it's not just in private industry, it's in even government jobs. Used to be that, you know, a lot of government had a lot of people just doing things that, you know, maybe you didn't need that many people to do. And, you know, I don't want to get in an argument about politics or government jobs, but anyone you talk to, there's pressures in government jobs to get to not have as many people doing the same thing they used to do 10 years ago, or to not even have that done. They just hire a company to do it, and they just get rid of that whole department. That happens all the time. And so when we think about jobs, now that, you know, we're here talking about God's work, what's our job? As Christians, what's our job? I mean, do we have jobs? Well, let me just take some of you anyway back down memory lane a little bit with some pictures. I don't know how well that shows up, but these are a lot of our kids. You may recognize some of the faces. And they've all, you know, a lot of them you'll see in these peculiar shirts. The blue ones for the boys, the pink ones like Shelby has for the girls. And it's a little blurry, but these shirts said Keepers of the Faith. It was a little club they had at church here. And, well, that makes sense, Keepers of the Faith. And that sounds like a task. And it is a task that we are to have, to be keepers of the faith. And so if we think about that, what does that mean, though? It sounds good. We're keepers of the faith. We're to guard our lives from sin and whatnot. And if we go through some of the verses that we're all familiar with. Keepers of the faith. What are some of the things that we might think of? Well, Paul, he gives a lot of advice to Timothy and instruction. And over and over, he's telling Timothy to not get caught up in sins, to keep himself pure. And he tells the churches to keep themselves pure and free from the sin and the things going on around them. In James 1:27, we're told to keep ourselves unstained by the world. And we all know what that means. In Galatians, Paul talks about the desires of the flesh and worldly desires that can drive us to death. And that these desires are at war with our spirits. And he talks about a spiritual war in a spiritual, you know, he talks about in his letters, you know, arming ourselves to fight a battle. He uses it figuratively as a battle between good and God and Satan and the world and evil. We're told by Paul to watch out who we hang out with, because evil companions can corrupt good morals. They can bring you down. They can influence you in bad ways. And we're warned about that. We're warned by Jesus about getting caught up in the treasures of this life. And, you know, the material things that are all going to rust and decay. And to remember where our true treasure is, in heaven. And we're told over and over not to love the world. Don't fall in love with the world. And to actually hate what is evil. And so, what do we conclude from all this? Or what have others concluded? How? Okay, well, then what should we do? Well, here's what a lot of people did. They built these things. It's a monastery. And they are amazing, you know, not only for their engineering, you know, some of them are built in really amazing places, but they're amazing for what they chose to do. They would go to such a remote regions of the world and isolate themselves from everything, and they practiced what they called asceticism, which was to abstain from any kind of just wealth or indulgence and just live a very meager life focused on God. And with all the best of intentions to keep themselves pure and study and pray. And so they would go off to these places, and these monasteries were built all over the world. You know, some of them in 800s and things like that. And they would build these spiritual fortresses, and they were free from the influences of the world. And as I said, they're built in these remote, amazing places, so far away from everything. And they still have them today. And the people that live in these are monks or maybe nuns. And I'm not trying to bash them, but I'm just saying, is that what God is calling us to do? Now, there was actually a very famous preacher in the Churches of Christ. He comes to Pepperdine quite a bit, and his name is escaping me for a moment, but he actually went to a monastery. He wanted to see what it's like, and he checked himself in for a couple of months. And he told a funny story. It's not true, but he said there was this guy that he went to the monastery, and, you know, they told him, now, this is not a, you know, it's hard to live here. It's a very simple life. It's can be long and tedious, and there's not much that you do. You just have a very plain room, and, you know, you're not even allowed to talk much. You only can say two words a year. He's like, wow, that's pretty hard. But he checked in, and after the first year, the head monk brought him in and said, well, how's things going? And he, you know, with his two words, he said, bed hard. So he went back, and the next year, they brought him in and said, you know, how's everything going? He said, bad food. So he went back, and the next year he came back, and they asked him how he was doing, and he said, I quit. And the head monk, he said, well, you know what? I'm not surprised. All you've done since you've been here is complain. And so, anyway, that's a little getting sidetracked, but at the monastery, the purpose was to keep yourself pure and actually purposefully abstain from any kind of pleasure or wealth, just to live a very primitive life. And people did this. Well, is that what Jesus calls us to do? I mean, if we were to go back and look at these things we're urged to do, I mean, it kind of makes sense, but really, that's just part of the picture, obviously. That's not all of the verses in the Bible. That's not all of the scriptures. And I don't believe that Jesus does want us to just dig ourselves in. Because let's look back at some of the things that Jesus says that we are to do. And the key passage that I want to read this evening and really focus on comes from the book of John. And in John, in John 13 is kind of the end of the road for Jesus' ministry, and he takes his disciples in and he washes their feet. And it's sort of the beginning of the series of events that leads up to his crucifixion. And the next four chapters is really a dialogue of Jesus, either his last words to his disciples or his last prayers to the Father. And it's a very It tells a lot about what was in Jesus' mind and what was very important for him to leave as his parting words with his disciples. And in his last prayer before he's arrested, Jesus prays for his disciples and also his followers that are to come after him. And so let's just take a few minutes and read that in John 17, starting in verse 6. I have revealed you to those whom you gave me out of the world. They were yours. You gave them to me, and they have obeyed your word. Now they know that everything you have given me comes from you. For I gave them the words you gave me, and they accepted them. They knew with certainty that I came from you, and they believed that you sent me. I pray for them. I am not praying for the world, but for those you have given me, for they are yours. All I have is yours, and all you have is mine. And glory has come to me through them. I will remain in the world no longer, but they are still in the world. And I am coming to you, Holy Father. Protect them by the power of your name, the name you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one. While I was with them, I protected them and kept them safe by that name you gave me. None has been lost except the one doomed to destruction, so that the scripture would be fulfilled. I am coming to you now, but I say these things while I am still in the world, so that they may have the full measure of my joy within them. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of it. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world. For them I sanctify myself, that they too may be fully sanctified. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me. And so it's a kind of long passage and might be worth reading several times. And as I did read it several times, these are the key thoughts that I, oops, sorry. These are kind of the key thoughts that are in there. He starts up by saying that, you know, he gave them the message God had given him to his disciples, and the world hated him. But unlike, you know, the one natural response might be to take them out of the world, or at least up to a monastery where they're safe and won't be influenced by the world and hurt and led astray, he asked God not to take them out of the world, kind of strangely. But on the contrary, he says that he's sending us into the world. Despite all the things going on in the world that are dangerous and bad and not good, he's sending us in there. And why? Here's the key thing. Why are we to go in the world? That the world through us might know God. And that's a really important point that bears, you know, thinking about. In verse 23, he says, not just in that they'll know God through us, but actually they'll know God through us when they see our unity. And our in this and in other passages, John talks about the world will see our love for God and for our brothers. And when they see that, they'll recognize it's not normal. It's not the way of the world. And they'll recognize there's something different, and they'll see God in us. So that brings me to the box here. Let's see what's in the box. A lot of people think it's an animal Shelby rescued that I couldn't leave at home. We've done that before. Let's see. Oh. Flashlight. Well, that's kind of funny. It's a flashlight in a box. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people are probably thinking different things about that. Shannon's probably thinking, where did he get all those? I didn't see him get those. And different people are wondering, well, that's kind of funny. Now, someone with like my way of thinking, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of you, probably the men mostly, I don't know why, but that would know, they know that box is there. And so those flashlights have been on this whole time. And they're thinking, what a waste of batteries. Because that's what I would be thinking if I was sitting out there. What a waste of batteries, because I know how expensive batteries are. But it's not really important what I think. It's what would Jesus think? Well, you know what I think Jesus would think? What a waste of batteries. What a waste of batteries. And although that may be funny, what if we have a wall around this place and we guard these scriptures real close and tight and make sure we just do them just right, and all the windows are closed and all the fences are big and tall and no one sees us? Is Jesus going to say, what a waste of batteries? Because Jesus said, we're the light of the world. And if we're in a box and we're taking care of that flashlight, we're not doing what Jesus said. We're just wasting batteries. We're taking care of ourselves. And that's not our job. We've got a job. Now, when I got out of school, companies would hire people just to have them around if they needed them. They would have a staff expert on A, B, and C in case that came up. Well, that's a different time now. There's no money to have people you might need. If they might need you, then they don't keep you. They'll get someone to do it when they need it. Our job's not a job of redundancy. It's not like, well, if we want to do it, here's what God wants us to do. God's counting on us to be that light. He said that that's how he's going to make himself known to the world, is through us. And if we don't do it, we're not doing our job. And how are we that light? Well, like I said in Jesus' prayer, the world will see us, and it's, there's always this thing, is it what you believe or what you do? Well, it's really, the requirement is God requires us to love him and to love our brother. And if we do that, if we really love them, that will drive all kinds of actions. And the world will see that, and they will know God through seeing us. And, you know, Eddie gave a class on the Beatitudes a while back, and I really like this little play on words, and I don't know if Eddie invented it or if he found it somewhere, but the Beatitudes were the be attitudes. It was the attitude you are. It was who you are. They're not really commands. They're who you need to be to be these kind of people that Jesus lists out in those Beatitudes. And that's what God says is our job, to love, to care, and And if we do those things, we will do a lot of things that people will see. And we will be the light that God wants us to be. And we won't have that light in a box that's doing no good. It'll be so bright, no one can stop it. And so let's think about those things as we just, you know, be conscious of it. To be conscious of everything we do and every attitude we have, the world's watching. And we need to be that light for Jesus. So that's the lesson for tonight. And if anybody has something they want prayed about or to put on Christ in baptism or to just come down here and say something, now is a good time to do that. Let's stand and sing.